jump up, let's get crazy. Jump up, let's get crazy. Welcome to the grand final edition of the Super Coach Coach podcast for 2013. And we've got a special guest joining Mark and I this week.
Special indeed.
And that is the current leader, that's right, sitting with only 1 week to go, the current leader of Super Coach 2013. And we think, and I guess he won't want to admit it, but I think deep down inside he'll think it too. He's got a pretty damn good shot at winning this. So let's welcome on the Dimowitz.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's good to be on the podcast. I have been an avid listener. So, cheers.
So Mark's actually going to lead us through the first part of the show. Before we get into how we go and all that, we'll just start off with an interview with you and how your year's gone. So Mark's got that ready and he's going to kick that off with you.
No problem.
All right. So how's the year gone for you? Has it all just been up the top? Did you start off really fast, or what's sort of the trajectory been like?
I think I've done pretty well from the beginning. I think I was like 350th in the first round. I blew out a little bit in the second, but then from about round three, steadily came from the, you know, the 300 or 400th hit first in round nine, and haven't dropped below third since then. So the year's gone pretty well. It doesn't feel like the perfect season, but I'm sure everyone listening who's trying as hard as well would probably feel like I'm just complaining by not saying it has been.
Top three for most of the season would make get pretty stressful, but also pretty fun, I'm imagining.
Yeah, look, in terms of the interest level in the thing and how focused I've been on it, look, it has become time consuming and obviously, yeah, really exciting, especially the fact that I've been lucky enough to do consistently well. So I haven't had that big letdown. So, you know, hopefully it doesn't come this weekend. But I've got to say, there is going to be a relief for it, you know, being concluded because, it has become all consuming in the last sort of 6 weeks.
Yeah, I can imagine. And partners and family don't necessarily approve of that sort of thing.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, once 50K was sort of on the line, I think, you know, I must admit she's been pretty good. She hasn't complained one bit once she knew that there was actually something on the line. At first it was just like, yeah, whatever, you know, you're doing well, that's fine. But when I sort of explained it was, you know, one out of 300,000, she became a little more interested in it.
And we have to explain that you're actually not based in Victoria like most of us footy nuts. You're up in Sydney, so you don't even have many people to talk to. I hope she's been helping you keep an eye on your Twitter account as well.
It's funny. I have heard her have a couple of conversations with people about Supercoach, and I've sort of laughed because, you know, she's obviously heard me talk about it too much at that point in time. But, yeah, you're right. I've got a couple of mates who sort of dabble in it, who are nowhere near interested in it the way that I've become. But, it's true, a little bit isolated. Maybe that's the secret weapon, you know, not getting too absorbed in the pack.
Rumour has it that you haven't done Supercoach a lot in the past.
No, that's true. That's true. This year is the first year I actually sat down and gave it a real crack into the team. I started one last year at the last minute. Played Dream Team previously and sort of found out about Supercoach through another mate and kind of liked the scoring system and the trading and all the rest of it. So started the team too late to do well last year. I couldn't tell you where I finished because I sort of gave up after it started doing so badly. But this year, you know, before the season started, you know, made a concerted effort to try and think about starting off on the right foot. So, first year, you might say.
You have no idea how much that pains me, given all the hours that I've spent over the years with Marcus toiling away at this game.
We've put our efforts into different things, Mark, like producing quality advice that helps people like John get to the number one position. He's a listener of the show, Mark. That's excellent news.
That is definitely actually pretty good. And we've had winners in the past that have also been listeners to the show as well. So, sure, that makes me feel nice and warm inside. Now, is there anything in your life like that makes you right into strategy games or something like that? Like, personally, I play poker as another hobby and I find them very similar pursuits.
Yeah, look, I think, I like playing poker as well. I think that style of thinking does suit this game. You know, as a kid, certain video games, those sorts of computer games are, you know, the strategy games, RPGs and things. I'm sure that a lot of people who play Supercoach would have been into those when they were kids as well. And even just sort of what I do for a living has sort of a strategic thinking element in finance. So I think anyone who also likes the stock market would probably get right into this sort of a game if they have that footy interest as well. So I definitely think there's a correlation there, and is a big reason why you know, I've enjoyed playing it.
Wow, yeah, you'd think that people involved in the stock market would think be great at this game, because it's, I mean, it's about footy and analysing that, but it's, at the end of the day, it's a trading game and it's about money and...
Yeah, just, yeah, looking at value, taking, you know, and just being able to weigh up decisions with a whole bunch of numbers. There's a huge gut element to it. Like, you know, I spent some time, you know, doing a spreadsheet up through the middle of the year and through the buys, because it's so difficult, you know, thinking about your trades, what your team's going to become 3 weeks from now, you know, and what money you may have. So, I mean, I found that useful going through the buys myself. But apart from that, you know, I didn't overanalyze it as well. But I think that came back from just being comfortable with numbers and sort of thinking to myself, you know, him plus him is going to be better than that guy, you know, through the journey.
What was your starting team like?
Yeah, look, I mean, I looking back at it now, it's a bit of a laugh when you go back and look at round one. I think I got a few things right, but by no means did I get a perfect side going. You know, I had Karnesis in there. I got sucked into Brisbane. I had Zorko, who I carried for, you know, the first half of the season.
That would have been a painful one. He really wasn't doing very well early on.
Yeah, he was so up and down. He did pull out some big scores. He wasn't a complete fail, but, you know, it was clear to me at one point that I needed to get rid of him. So I think probably the biggest talking point was I had Blixarves at R2, and my plan was only to carry him. I think Leuenberger, you know, he was out till like round five, so I just... I rolled the dice and thought to myself that I'd just get Leuenberger in as my first upgrade using some cash from some rookies. So I did burn some trades early on in the piece, moving guys who had nowhere near ripened to be sort of culled out of the team. Like Comer, I think, was one. He was only at like 160K, and I, you know, got rid of him just to get Leuenberger in. So I think I did dodge a bullet. To be honest, I don't think that was a masterstroke. Whether that let me build a different team and that worked out, I actually think I was lucky that didn't blow up in my face more than it did.
Because I haven't really actually seen many teams with the rookie at R2, so you'd think that would have had some influence on what ended up happening over the course of the season, and maybe because you didn't just waste so much money at your R2, like I had Paddy Ryder and he didn't do a whole lot.
Yeah, it must have been. I mean, I think round two I immediately got rid of Karnesis, brought Josh Kennedy in. I got Kobe Stevens down to a low ball rookie. So, I mean, the cash that wasn't sitting there was used on other lines. And I think my strategy, if there was really one that I was focused on, was I wanted all of my forwards to be, you know, at worst sort of a mid price. So Josh Kennedy was my, you know, my sixth forward from round two. And I wanted to try and maintain that. If there was one thing I was focused on, it was... wasn't going to play rookies in the forward line.
I think the other player that really stands out for me is Turlick. Nailing him in the starting side, considering he's basically been a keeper, has just been huge.
He's probably another player that if someone looked at my side a few weeks back, you know, other guys at the top, they probably would have thought, you know, Dean Turlick's a guy I'm going to get points on. He hasn't set the world on fire last few weeks, but, I mean, if you looked at him versus Heath Shaw over the last four, I mean, Heath Shaw has been getting 30s, or occasionally he does. Dean Turlick, apart from that one time in the wet at Geelong when everyone dumped Turlick, you know, I sort of said to myself, I think it's probably due to the fact he played Geelong in the wet, you know. So I kept him, and I'm kind of glad I did. Obviously, it saved a trade, and he's been as good as most. He's not obviously one of the premiums at the back, but, you know, there's been plenty of worse guys I could have picked than him.
And the other thing that just blows my mind is you started JPK. I know he had a good first 2 weeks, I think, but yeah, like you paid $643,000 for him and I ranked number one.
Yeah, look, I've played him through the whole year. That's right. I mean, even Cochin's been a little bit of a drag. Mundy hasn't set the world on fire. So look, I wouldn't blame anyone, like I've said already, that if they looked at my team, they'd sort of go, how did this guy do it? And I've probably asked myself the question. I think it was just gradual wins. I managed to play certain rookies on the field at the right time. You know, Blixars when he hit 100 and Matt Jones, who wasn't in my starting team. But to be honest, you know, everyone talks about some of these other rookies, but he was nearly my most important rookie in the midfield.
Yeah, we both had him as well and got a lot of benefit from him.
Yeah, he wasn't that popular, and he had some great weeks, and he turned it up a few times.
So, what's been your general trading strategy? We moved to 30 trades this year. Now, you probably you sort of got to take a fresh eyes on that. But how did you approach it from the start, and how has that changed over the course?
Yeah, so I wasn't shy with corrective trades at the start. So, you know, I realized after the first week, I mean, it's amazing how after one round you can look at your starting team and think, how did I even pick these guys? So, I mean, pretty quickly got Josh Kennedy in, changed a couple of my rookies and did, you know, traded twice every week for the first sort of 4 or 5 weeks before wow. I calmed down a little bit. And that was because, well, I don't know, I think because I got into first or started ranking really well early in the year, it probably spurred me on a little bit to maintain it. It's kind of hard to hold off the trades and let your ranking fall. So it probably made me go fairly aggressive early. In terms of the strategy, look, I was pretty keen on certain players. So, I mean, generally I thought, you know, a couple of weeks out, you know, I want that player and generally waited until his break even sort of fell down to a reasonable level. I didn't overpay for players. I let rookies really get to their top. You know, Dwyer and Matt Jones were guys that people got rid of when they sort of hit 200 something K, but they ended up going, you know, almost four. So generally, if there was a strategy, it was to make sure that the rookies, where possible, you know, were really at their top and not pick up guys who had enormous break evens.
Guys, I think a lot of people that I've spoken to throughout the year have thought with the extra trades, and if you're going to be super aggressive, that just means ditching these rookies before they max out and just trade and upgrade as quickly as possible without necessarily waiting and being patient at different times. So it's interesting that you say that you can be super aggressive and patient at the same time.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. I mean, the aggressive part came at the start where I was, you know, switching like for like, so, you know, one rookie in, one rookie out. But, you know, it's pretty important that you get those correct. But yeah, I think sometimes just don't pull the trigger after 1 week is often the lesson that people need to learn, I think.
What trade stands out as you as one that like really helped catapult your season?
Yeah, it has to be bringing Joel Selwood in the week after Watson got injured. Yeah, 100%. If I bump into Joel Selwood and I manage to pull it off, I owe him a beer because he's won it for me if I pull it off since, you know, round 16 or whenever it was when Watson got injured.
Yeah, I'm surprised I've managed to rank anywhere near the top 300 without getting Selwood. He's just been an extremely important player. I think I looked at the prices this week and Selwood is 650 and Ablett is 515.
It's
just amazing compared to when you look back 8 weeks ago. What do you think's the worst trade? Is there something that stands out that you go, gee, I wish I could have that one back?
Probably, bringing Daisy Thomas in, that was a waste. But, I mean, he did pump out 100 and then, you know, I brought Pritis in who, to be honest, I probably, again, a few weeks ago thought, you know, he's going to be my downfall, but he's been pretty solid the last few weeks. So I haven't really lost anything out except for the cost of the trade. If I think again back through some of the ones I've done, that probably explains why I've done okay. There aren't any horrible, horrible trades. I've just probably wasted a couple here or there that were unnecessary. So, you know, maybe I culled a couple of rookies through the middle. Like I held on to Brad Crouch for what seemed like an eternity when he had that hammy and then sort of was forced to get rid of him. And, yeah, you know, he'd be nice to have on the bench. So I probably, since the starting team corrections, I probably haven't had any horrible trades, which maybe is a reason why I'm doing well.
Now, Marcus and I have had this debate a number of times this year about trading in the extra premium for your bench. I noticed that your midfield has an extra premium on the bench. The way your team's set up at the moment, it looks like you've got two premiums on there because you've got Hartlett, but there's just some DPP stuff going on.
Yeah.
What made you go and grab the extra mid premium?
Yeah, that came about more through injuries which occurred, actually. So my intention was always to have a DPP link to defence into the forwards and then forwards into the rucks. And I had that when Goods was in the defence and Nat Nui was still kicking around. So when he went down, I just felt like I needed more midfield power, essentially. I with Brett Goods and Turlich, and Staker for that matter, I was pretty confident I was going to be able to get a lot of points through the emergency loophole each week because, I'd have almost two options of the defence. So long story short, once Nick Nanui went down, I had to push McBean into the ruck and basically picked up Barlow because I just thought I needed the points. So that was a little bit of a risky move because it did remove some cover or the flexibility that I had. So to be honest, my plan was never to have that seventh pure mid. But when I just came to the point where I needed to make the trade, I just went for the guy that I thought would get me the most points, which was Barlow, and sort of what you described was just the result.
Okay. Now, so you've got Buddy. What point did you bring him in? Was it like at his lowest point or?
Yeah, I brought him in. I'm just trying to say what would it was. It was when he was like 420. So it was well and truly when he'd sort of fallen. And look, it was just, I think, round 10, just looking at it now. So I picked him up with the thought that he was going to have a big second half. So he's been pretty sluggish, but he's been kind of crucial these last couple of weeks for me because he is fairly unique in the top 10. And, you know, I think Friday night, if he hits 100, that's a really good way for me to start because, you know, he's pretty uncommon. So it's points that people have to grab from elsewhere.
Going
to
be a lot riding on Buddy then. I'm sure the Sydney defenders will be going pretty hard at him.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt that that's far from guaranteed. So, I'll take an 80 at this point.
Yeah. So why do you think you're in front overall?
I think if it was going to be one thing other than Joel Selwood and getting his massive scores as a captain last few weeks. So I think recently the gap has a lot to do with I managed to get him captain the weeks Abbott was quiet. And then apart from that, I really think it has to do with the times where I managed to put rookies on the field for the right round. So, you know, I can think of four or five occasions where I managed to put those guys that were on the bench onto the field and they picked up 100. So I think that adds up because I really can't see it otherwise. I mean, people who look at my starting team have said, wow, you know, there's nothing remarkable about it. You know, I haven't had Griffin. I didn't have Jack. So it must have just come back to that.
I mean, there's obviously... You put yourself in the right spot, you try and do the right things, but there's a certain amount of luck involved, a bit like playing poker, that's why I can compare it. And those rookies, sometimes it is just you're rolling dice and sometimes you can hit the same dice five times in a row.
I think it's, you know, I'd accept that there's a bit of both. You know, I suppose I tried to pick players that I didn't think would score low. You know, I think my team has been very consistent and it comes back to, you know, I managed to get up the top early and stay there and it must be explained by the fact that the team just managed to just keep pumping out consistent scores. And I suppose the season unfolded in a way where that was enough. You know, I haven't played it previous years, so I can't say if my team's performed dramatically different to the guys that won it there. But I'm sure year to year, you know, a different style team's probably going to take it out. So,
yeah, absolutely. And just different strategies and just the trajectories are quite different. Like I know Impromptu was... he was like you, like up the top mid-season, whereas last year's winner was ranked 20,000th after the second round. So, yeah, it can go a little bit differently.
Yeah, wow.
How do you feel going into this week?
Yeah, look, I think after last Sunday when that lead came in, it was nice to sort of be able to go into the last week with an advantage over other people. I mean, you know... anything can happen, but I knew at that point that, okay, you know, maybe it's mine to lose to a degree. You know, something ridiculous is going to have to take place where I get a couple of zeros and some injuries and you know, probability would suggest that that's not going to happen. But I must admit, before the teams were coming out and everyone was saying, Freo, we're going to rest all their players, I think the nerves kicked in and I have a feeling I'll be a bit of a wreck through the weekend just until the results are out for sure.
You're just going to park yourself in front of a TV?
Funnily enough, I'll actually be going down to Melbourne to watch the Bombers-Richmond game, so maybe it's good that I'm down there in the home of footy.
How does your team compare to the teams around you?
Well, look, I mean, at this point, I've almost tried to stop worrying about it because it's 1 week, anything can happen. But, I mean, the guy in second has basically the same midfield as me, which is a pretty good place for me to be in, I think, because he's obviously going to have to pull points from elsewhere. So I think against second, he's going to have to get points in his defence and he's got a couple of other guys in the forward line, I think. The guy in third, if he doesn't have any trades, is going to cop a zero in the midfield because of Fife and Mundy not playing, which would suck for him. You know, I'd be pretty gutted at that point. So, I mean, that's puts a bit more space on me there. And then as we go back into fourth and fifth, you know, there's a bit more noise and I suppose they get further away. So I haven't really tried to overanalyze anyone because otherwise I'll just be a mess, you know, going over the weekend. So,
yeah, you mentioned fifth, which is whatever it takes. The Supercoach advisor who was on this show earlier in the year and has been writing articles for us throughout the preseason. Yeah, he's a solid 300 points behind you. It's interesting... like just looking how close all the teams are just under you. Like there's less than 100 points between nine teams or eight teams from two to ninth. So it could have easily worked out that it was that close up the top.
I know. It's that's exactly why when I was saying when the results came out last week, it was a bit of a relief just to know that I had that advantage. You know, I think going into the weekend with, you know, a 10-point advantage, that I'd be crazy nervous, as you'd expect. You know, so at this point, it's sort of like, well, you know, I've got a bit of a lead. It's great to be in that position. If disaster strikes, it's probably going to hit a lot of teams, not just mine. So for me to sort of give up 300 points would take something fairly remarkable. But, you know, stranger things have happened. I've still got to make sure I get a captain right, for example, and hopefully that I don't cop any donuts to start with. So that's really all I'll be doing this weekend is probably just ticking off my own players and worrying less about the scores that other guys get.
So are you going to make the more safe decisions then this week?
Yeah, I think that's probably – I think putting risks on the table at this point would be silly. I think it's probably for others to make risks, you know, just trying to chase the points. And, you know, I guess that's clearly what those guys will do. So,
yeah, I think Matt said last week that he didn't take Selwood's captain score because he wanted to take a risk and try and go for it and gamble to take number one.
Yeah, which makes sense, right? I mean – I can see why he would have thought that. So, I mean, again, that probably is another reason why I can relax a little bit because, you know, I can know I'm take the safe options and, you know, other guys are the ones which are going to have to chase points, you know, for example, putting Colquhoun on the field and hoping he gets 120 versus Staker, for example. So I don't think that there's any crazy moves that I need to make or even potentially that are worth making for me at this point, but I suppose I'll weigh it up as it comes.
Marcus, how'd you go on the weekend, mate?
24-58, which put me 2 points ahead of you, Mark. And I know you don't really care because you're in all these prelim finals and that's really awesome for you and you won, but I beat you by 2 points. Suck it.
You certainly did. And I scored 24-56 up to 249. Dunny was on the show last week. We played in a massive prelim. I think I might have won by 12 points to Will Minson, who I brought in last week, scored 154 and a whole bunch of that in the last quarter, so that was pretty fun. Somehow, I made the grand final of two of the top four ranked leagues in Australia, so that's my claim to fame. I did tell you that I go all right at these league things, Marcus. who knows whether I'll get across the line. I'm playing Warnie from DT Talk in the best SC site league and our mate Birdie in the Supercoach H's League, which is ranked number two. So I've still got a trade left. I'm in a weird spot. I've got a trade left. And I've got no way of using it. I've got a fully premium team with no injuries.
Surely you just look for a guy that you can loophole, basically, I'd say, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm thinking. I was expecting to need to use it. I thought Ibbotson won't play or there'll be some other player rested, but it just didn't happen with my team.
Yeah, there'd be a few people who wish they had that trade, I'm sure.
Yeah, I will sell it to someone. Can I do that?
Actually, we're coming back next week, guys. We were going to make this the last show of the season, but Mark, seeing as we have John on this week, we're going to do our review for the year next week instead. So we're just going to run through team sheets now, look at the big ins and outs. As we forecasted, Frio has a lot of outs, and it's going to cause some huge issues. So
we're also going to preview Supercoach Finals next week, the new Supercoach game that's been available. So we'll have a bit of a look at that next week as well as the season review.
Okay, so let's start off at Sydney Hawthorn. Pretty tough to pick from a fantasy point of view with the two heavyweights meeting each other.
Hannabry out. I know a few people have got him. Great season. Says Hannabry out with a hand. I know that he picked up the knee injury on the weekend, so I'm surprised it says that. And I think probably the most fantasy relevant one here is Cyril out for this week. I know a lot of people picked him up as late season cover, hoping he had a bit of an upside and not playing this week.
On to the next game then, St Kilda Frio, and here's where a majority of the carnage happened. We have Fife out, Mundy out, Ballantyne Hill out, Subin out, and a couple other not-so-fantasy-related guys like Zach Dawson, but it's going to be pretty interesting to see where the rest of the points flow. You'll be hoping Barlow gets a fair share of what's left on field.
Well, I guess he cops a tag for the first time this year.
Yeah, that's an interesting point, actually. I didn't even think about that. Yeah, look, Barlow going out, there'd probably be a few people who went for Fife or Mundy as a bit of a point of difference compared to Barlow, so I feel for those people. But yeah, your point on Barlow copying a tag is an interesting one, actually. There's probably absolute certainty, I suppose. Although Lachie Neal's been killing it. I don't know if they just don't trust Barlow's disposal and maybe they might go to Daniel Pearce or.
Yeah, I was thinking Pearce.
Or even Mzungu.
Because of Fifer Mundy, nobody's been near Barlow all year.
Mm-mm. I think Barlow's going to fly through his career under with that luxury, is my guess. But he's a good player, underrated in some ways. But yeah, I'm not sure if he'll cop Clint Jones or not.
Now, Geelong-Brisbane is a game I'm pretty keen on because the Lions beat us in that upset earlier on.
That was a good quarter of footy, that one, to watch.
I reckon because of that, the Cats are going to come out wanting to smash the Lions, and it's 1 week out from final, so we want to head into that with good form. So I'm pretty confident that there'll be some good points up on offer for captaincy and vice-captaincy options in this game. And Steve Johnson's continuing to kill it and probably flying under the radar a little bit, as much as Steve Johnson can anyway, just because Selwood's been absolutely killing it. But Johnson did outscore Selwood on the weekend.
Just. Now, I won't get you involved in this one, John, because I know that you shouldn't be giving away your captaincy choices. But, Marcus, Rain's going to go to Selwood. Is that a concern? I did see something during the week that his last two against Rain's have been below 100. So Rain's dad actually held him. But I think I looked into it a little bit more, and I think they were like 2011, 2009 or something. So.
Yeah, I can't remember, but I think a couple of weeks ago there was some doubt on Selwood because of a tag as well. I think, was that Scotty Selwood on him? And I think Scotty's performed well in the past on him. And Joel's just in career best form. He scored 144 in that game, and he scored, I think, 130-plus in seven of the last eight. And
Jesus.
Yeah, you just got to back that form, even if no matter who they're playing, I think. When a player's playing like that, I mean, unless you're in the rare situation where you're right up top and you might have to take some POD, or you're in a grand final and you know he's going Selwood and he's ahead of you, so you need to take a POD. But apart from that, I think if you're being just sensible about it, I think you kind of have to pick him. Seven out of the last eight is too good to pass up. That's skill too. All right, now to the Port Carlton game, and I think Cruiser is actually coming back this week. Is that?
Didn't we say that last week, though?
And the week before, wasn't that too? So I think hopefully he's back for real this week. Walker back in as well.
Apparently he was just ill on the weekend, so that would be a definite in.
I know laid out was painful for some. We were watching the game with Felix and from the Supercoach Coach community, and he brought him in before the lockout, and then Walker was laid out, so that was very painful for him. He'll be glad he's back. To the West Coast. And
just on that last one, wasn't Wingard going to be a laid out? So, I mean, I reckon for those who do have him, just watch Wingard, because Jake Needs sitting in the emergencies could well come in for him. Wasn't he mentioned as being injured or was going to be rested through the week or something like that?
He was subbed on the previous week, I think. Didn't get to see that game because we were out, but I'm pretty sure he was subbed because of some sort of injury. So, yeah, we might be some sort of laid out, although lots to play for in that game now.
Now, West Coast Eagles v Adelaide will be
not much to play for.
Bit of a
imagine you had said that at the start of the year. West Coast Eagles, Crows, no finals actions, nothing to play for in the last round.
I reckon they'll both. Or West Coast seem like they're pretty eager to put in a good showing this week. All right, Essendon Richmond, you'll both be there. We've got some interesting ins for Essendon. Elliot Kavanagh coming in, young boy, and David Hill as well.
Yeah, he's number 28. He's a good little player.
Yeah, for the Tigers, I mean, I think it'll be interesting with Jack Riewoldt going out, just seeing how the team operates, you know, replacing him with Stevenson, which is probably a bit of finals prep just to get him, get some run in his legs in case he's needed. But, yeah, look, I think Jack Riewoldt going out is going to be a huge out for Richmond. Just structurally, it'll be interesting to see if Ty Vickery can hold the ship up forward, because, I mean, Edwards has done well, but it's generally been as that third forward. So, I don't know. I go into this game thinking that I reckon Essendon will put in a real show, and I don't think it's going to be a blowout by any stretch.
The other interesting thing from that game is Heath Hocking out with suspension. I guess Benny Howlett has played a tagging role at times. I'm not 100% sure who Ben goes to, but it might not be Cochin this week.
Now to Gold Coast GWS.
I guess the two interesting things are Dan Gorringe is out, which means Charlie Dixon will probably be the number one ruck, and Sam Day going in forward, so that's pretty relevant. And a couple of people do have Jared Harborough, who missed as was a late withdrawal last week, and he's back.
Collingwood, North Melbourne, then we've got Dane Beams coming back into the side, and Luke Ball out. And now the last game for the week, the Dogs versus Melbourne. And the Dogs have been playing such great football that they could actually feast on Melbourne. So we'll be looking at Libba for a big score, and he's been an absolute jet to finish the year. And I know we'll be looking very closely at him next year.
The commission confirmed that there's going to be two buys for next year. So
that'll make it more fun. I like the buys. It's good.
Surely we're looking for another rule.
It certainly forces you to, you know, put some thought into it, and whether that's good for most players as opposed to the few that, you know, want to do that, I'm not sure, but people managed to deal with it this year, so I think everyone will be fine.
But as you say, like, you really do need some form of spreadsheet or written down way of doing it, because conceptualizing how your team is going to change over those 3 weeks is actually quite difficult to picture in your brain. So
Yeah, it is, especially when you factor in price movements and the like. But I wouldn't be surprised if the DPP link next year is the thing everyone goes crazy on, because even teams now, you know, these resting of players, you need to have amazing cover, almost more than just the two people on a line. You need to be able to move them between, I think. So I know that's sort of something I'll be keeping in my head.
All right, so that wraps a good show. Thanks so much for coming on, and best of luck for this week's grand final, and for you, 50Ks on the line.
Yeah, look, it is. But yeah, thanks for having me, guys. And yeah, look, no doubt I'll flick a note on Twitter and you'll see how I'm going over the weekend.
Warnie's going down this weekend. Warnie from DT Talk, you know it, you are going down. So, John, hopefully you'll come on in the preseason if you do manage to take it down, and we can have a chat then about how to win and looking towards next year.
And I just remembered, the $1,000 cash group that Supercoach Coach is running. Just taking a look at the league there, and obviously you're leading. And we've got 2 and 3, whatever it takes, and slobs. But I think, like we said, you seem pretty comfortable there. So I think we'll be transferring you some money too, John. All the best for the upcoming round. And thanks so much for your support throughout the year, guys. Best of luck for the grand final. And if you guys have the time, join us for the Supercoach Finals preview and the Supercoach 2013 wrap-up next week. Cheers.
Thanks, everyone.